A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants to talk about the ruling pen. Not the kind of thing most people think about, which is exactly why it's interesting. He's asking about its history and hand-designed signage, the specific lacquers and oil-based inks it was used with, its deep connection to cartography, and whether this thing still has a role today in ultra-fine industrial marking, where precision is everything. And the short answer is yes, it does. In clean rooms, on turbine blades, on prototype Mars rover sensors, the tool that hasn't fundamentally changed in 400 years is still drawing lines thinner than anything a modern technical pen can manage.
Thinner than a human hair by a factor of about 10. A ruling pen in skilled hands can draw a line 0.01 millimeters wide. The finest Rotring Isograph technical pen bottoms out at 0.13 millimeters. That's more than 10 times thicker, and the Isograph clogs constantly with anything heavier than drafting ink. The ruling pen just...
because there's nothing to clog.
Or rather, that's the whole point. Two adjustable metal blades, a thumb screw, and a gap. That's the entire mechanism. No capillary feed, no cartridge, no needle. You load the ink between the blades with a brush or a dropper, and it flows out by gravity and surface tension. If it clogs, you wipe it. If you need a different line width, you turn a screw. It's the opposite of a precision instrument in the modern sense. No micro machine feeds, no sealed cartridges, and that's precisely why it works where modern tools fail.
Let's start with what this thing actually is, because I think most people picture a fountain pen or a dip pen and assume it's basically the same idea.
It's not. A dip pen has a split nib. You press down, the tines spread, ink flows through a capillary slit. A fountain pen adds a feed and a reservoir. A ruling pen has no split, no feed, no capillary action at all. It's two solid metal blades that come together at the tip, adjusted by a thumb screw. The gap between the blades forms a little reservoir that holds the ink. When you draw it along a straight edge, hence ruling, pen, the ink flows out in a perfectly controlled line. You can set it to deliver a hairline or a stripe 12 millimeters wide and everything in between, all from the same tool.
It's 4 centuries old.
First illustrated in 1588. Jacques Besson, a French mathematician, included it in his treatise Theatrum Instrumentorum Machinarum, basically a catalog of precision instruments. It evolved from compass and pen combinations that Renaissance cartographers were already using. The innovation was separating the pen from the compass so you could use it with a straight edge. That was the birth of the ruling pen as a standalone tool.
From the beginning, this was a cartographer's instrument.
Cartography, architecture, engineering drafting, anyone who needed a ruled line of consistent width. And the key word is consistent. Before the ruling pen, if you wanted to draw a line on a map, you used a quill. Quills wear down, the line width changes as you go, and you're constantly recutting the nib. With a ruling pen, you set the gap once with the thumb screw, and you get the same line width for an entire sheet. That's a revolution in precision.
This is before anyone had standardized line widths or ISO drafting conventions. The thumb screw was the standard.
You'd set it by eye or with a feeler gauge, but once set, it stayed. That repeatability is why the Cassini map of France, produced between 1740 and 1793, over 180 sheets, could maintain consistent contour lines across a project that spanned more than 50 years and 4 generations of the Cassini family. Every cartographer on that project was using ruling pens, and they could all match the same line weights because the tool enforced consistency.
That's a wild thought. A multi-decade national survey where the quality control mechanism was a thumb screw.
Shellac-based ink. Which brings us to the chemistry. Because the ruling pen's mechanical genius only worked if you had the right ink formulation. The pen was the platform, the ink was the performance.
The real magic wasn't the metal blades. It was what you put between them.
And the inks used in ruling pens were nothing like what you put in a fountain pen today. Fountain pen ink is dye-based, water-thin, designed to flow through a capillary feed. Ruling pen inks were heavy, opaque, pigment-loaded fluids, sometimes almost paste-like. That would destroy a fountain pen in seconds. We're talking shellac-based India ink, sign painter's enamel, and later, oil-based show card colors.
Let's unpack the shellac formulation. Because you mentioned India ink, and I think most people assume that's just black ink from a bottle.
India ink is a specific thing. The classic formulation was developed in the 1830s by a British ink maker named John Goffey Wood. Before Wood, India ink came in stick form. You'd grind it on an inkstone with water, like Chinese calligraphy ink. Wood figured out how to make it liquid and shelf-stable. His formula was shellac flakes dissolved in a borax solution, plus lamp black pigment, which is essentially soot, and water. The shellac is the binder. When the water evaporates, the shellac hardens and locks the pigment onto the surface. It's waterproof, permanent, and it doesn't bleed.
This is essentially unchanged today.
The formula is basically identical. Shellac flakes, borax, lamp black, water, maybe a wetting agent to help it flow. That's it. And here's why it matters for ruling pens. Shellac-based ink is aggressive. It dries fast, it hardens into a waterproof film, and if it dries inside a capillary feed, you've destroyed your pen. Ruling pens have no feed. If the ink dries between the blades, you open the gap, chip it off, and keep going. The tool is almost indestructible in that sense.
Which made it perfect for sign painters working on glass and metal.
So let's talk about the signage world, because this is where the ruling pen really earned its keep outside of drafting rooms. Before the 1960s, if you wanted a sign for a shop window, a painted advertisement on a wall, or lettering on a delivery truck, it was all done by hand. The toolkit was a mahl stick, a set of brushes, and a ruling pen. The ruling pen was for the straight lines, borders, underlines, architectural elements in the lettering design.
They were using oil-based enamels and shellac-based show card blacks, not watercolor.
The standard sign painter's ink for glass was called Show Card Black. It was shellac-based, heavily pigmented with lamp black, and loaded with alcohol as the solvent so it would dry fast on a non-porous surface. Glass doesn't absorb anything, so the ink has to form a film on top and adhere through the shellac's mechanical grip. The Show Card Writer's Manual by E. Bullman from the 1950s, which is still referenced by sign painters today, gives detailed instructions for mixing this stuff. You'd start with shellac flakes, dissolve them in denatured alcohol, add lamp black, and adjust the viscosity with more alcohol until it flowed through the ruling pen without dripping.
The ruling pen handled this better than a brush? Because?
A brush gives you a soft edge. A ruling pen gives you a crisp, hard edge, exactly what you want for lettering strokes and borders. But more importantly, the adjustable gap meant you could load thick, opaque enamel into the pen and draw a solid white line on glass in a single pass. Titanium dioxide white in a linseed oil base with a Japan dryer to speed curing. That's heavy, viscous stuff. A quill or a steel nib would clog instantly. A ruling pen with the gap open to half a millimeter just lets it flow.
The ruling pen was basically the only tool that could handle sign enamel in a controlled line.
For straight lines, absolutely. For curved lettering, sign painters use brushes. The ruling pen is really designed for straight edge work. But sign painting involves a lot of straight lines, and the ruling pen was the workhorse. You'd set it for a quarter inch stripe, load it with enamel, and run it along a straight edge to create the backbone of a letter form. Then you'd come back with a brush for the curves and serifs.
That same shellac-based ink that led sign painters write on glass. It also made possible the most accurate maps of the 18th century.
That's the cartography connection. From the 1600s through the 1970s, the ruling pen was the primary line drawing tool in map making, and the technique that really shows off what it could do is hachuring.
Hachuring, those little parallel lines that indicate slope on old topographic maps.
Before contour lines became standard in the late 19th century, cartographers used hachures to show elevation. The idea is that the steeper the slope, the thicker and closer together the lines. So you needed to vary line width continuously as you moved across a hillside. Thin lines on the gentle slope at the top, thick lines on the steep face. A quill can't do that consistently. A ruling pin can, because you adjust the thumbscrew as you go. It's almost like a manual line width modulator.
They were doing this on copper engraving plates?
On the original survey sheets, yes, but the printing was done from engraved copper plates. The cartographer would draw the map with a ruling pen on paper, then an engraver would transfer it to copper. But the engraver was also using a ruling pen, a specialized version with a diamond tip or a hardened steel blade for scoring the metal. Same principle, same adjustable gap, just much harder materials.
The Cassini map you mentioned, that's the one that first used contour lines instead of hatchers, right?
It used both, actually. The Cassini survey was the first to establish a national triangulation network and produce consistent topographic sheets. The contour lines for elevation were a major innovation, and they were all drawn with ruling pins. The consistency requirement was brutal. Across 180 sheets, the line weight for a given elevation interval had to be identical. If one cartographer's hand was heavier than another's, you'd misread the terrain. The ruling pin's thumbscrew was the quality control.
The ink had to be waterproof because these sheets were going to get wet during the printing process.
Shellac-based India ink, same as the sign painters. Waterproof, permanent, dense black. The cartographic standard was that a line had to survive being soaked in water for 24 hours without bleeding. India ink does that because the shellac binder is insoluble once cured. Dye-based inks fail that test immediately.
From the 1500s through the 1970s, the ruling pen was the precision line drawing tool. Then technical pens arrived. Rapidograph, rotring isograph, and presumably ate its lunch.
For most applications, yes. The technical pen solved a real problem. With a ruling pen, you have to load ink with a brush or dropper every few lines. It's slow, it's messy, and it requires skill. A technical pen has a sealed cartridge, a capillary feed, and a needle that produces a consistent line width without any user adjustment. For architectural drafting and engineering drawings, it was a massive productivity improvement. By the 1980s, ruling pens had basically disappeared from drafting tables.
They didn't disappear from clean rooms and machine shops.
You'd think digital plotting killed the ruling pen. But in clean rooms and machine shops, it's having a quiet renaissance. And it's for exactly the reason you'd expect. The technical pen's capillary feed is also its Achilles heel.
Because it clogs.
Because it clogs. A technical pen works by capillary action. Ink is drawn through a tiny channel between the cartridge and the nib. The channel in a 0.13mm rotring isograph is about the width of a single human hair. If you put anything heavier than drafting ink through it, anything with particles, anything viscous, that channel blocks. And once it's blocked, you're disassembling the pen, soaking it in solvent, running a cleaning wire through the feed. It's a whole ordeal.
Ruling pens have no feed.
No feed, no channel, no needle. Just two blades and a gap. You can put ceramic slurry between those blades, conductive silver epoxy, heat-resistant lacquer loaded with metal oxides. The only thing that matters is whether the fluid will flow through the gap you've set. If it won't, you open the gap a little more. If it dries, you chip it off and reload. It's the simplest possible fluid delivery system, and for difficult materials, that simplicity is an advantage.
Let's get specific. Where is this actually happening?
NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. In 2012, they were prototyping sensor arrays for the next Mars rover. This was post-Curiosity, heading toward what became Perseverance. The sensors required conductive traces made from silver epoxy. Silver epoxy is basically microscopic silver flakes suspended in a two-part resin. Its viscosity is around 10,000 centipoise. For comparison, water is 1 centipoise. Drafting ink is maybe 5 to 10. This stuff is like cold honey loaded with metal glitter.
It clogged everything.
Every commercial technical pen they tested. The silver flakes would bridge across the capillary channel, the resin would start curing inside the feed, and the pen was ruined. So one of the engineers, and this is documented in a JPL technical note, went to an art supply store, bought a ruling pen for about $15, and it worked perfectly. The adjustable gap let them dial in exactly the line width they needed for the conductive traces. And when the epoxy started to thicken, they just wiped the blades and reloaded.
A 400-year-old tool, solving a problem that modern engineering couldn't.
It's not just JPL. In semiconductor manufacturing, when a photomask has a defect, a pinhole or a scratch in the chrome layer, you can repair it by applying an opaque lacquer with a ruling pin. The line widths involved are often below 1 micron once projected onto the wafer, so the repair has to be incredibly precise. A ruling pen with a 0.05 millimeter gap can apply the lacquer exactly where it's needed. A technical pen can't get below 0.13 millimeters, and a robotic dispenser costs tens of thousands of dollars.
What about aerospace?
Jet engine turbine blades operate at temperatures that can exceed the melting point of the metal they're made from. They survive because of internal cooling channels and thermal barrier coatings. But they still need identification marks, serial numbers, batch codes, inspection stamps. Those marks have to survive 400 degrees Celsius, sometimes higher. The inks used are ceramic-based, metal oxide pigments in a silicate binder that fuses to the blade surface during heat treatment. It's thick, abrasive, and if it dries in your pen, that pen is dead.
The ruling pen handles it.
Handles it and lets the operator vary line width on a curved surface without changing tools. A turbine blade isn't flat. It's an airfoil with compound curves. With a technical pen, you need to maintain a consistent angle to the surface, which is nearly impossible on a curve. With a ruling pen, you adjust the angle of the blades to the surface and the gap to control flow. It's more like a brush in that sense, but with the precision of a hard edge.
Let's talk about that 0.01 millimeter claim. That sounds almost too extreme to be practical.
It's at the absolute limit of what's achievable, and it requires perfect conditions. A perfectly smooth substrate, ink with very low viscosity, and an extremely steady hand. But it's physically possible because of how the ruling pen works. The line width is determined by the gap between the blades at the tip. If you grind the blades to a needle fine point and close the gap until the blades are almost touching, the ink film that transfers to the surface can be vanishingly thin.
Compare that to a technical pen.
A technical pen's line width is determined by the diameter of the needle inside the nib tube. The finest commercially available is the Rotring Isograph 0.13 mm. Below that, you run into two problems. First, capillary action stops working reliably because the channel is so narrow that surface tension effects dominate and ink won't flow. Second, the needle itself becomes so fragile that it bends if you look at it wrong. The ruling pin has no needle. The blades are solid metal, and the line width is just the gap. You're not fighting capillary physics, you're just controlling a fluid film.
The ruling pen wins at sub 0.1mm precision, not despite being simpler, but because it's simpler.
That's the core insight. Sometimes removing mechanisms increases precision by eliminating failure modes. Every component you add, a feed, a cartridge, a needle, is another thing that can clog, wear, or introduce variability. The ruling pen has two blades and a screw. There's almost nothing to go wrong.
There's a whole community of modern practitioners who figured this out.
Calligraphers and industrial artists have been quietly advancing the ruling pen for decades. Yukimi Anand, who's based in California, uses ruling pens for applying gold leaf sizing on glass. The sizing is an oil-based adhesive that has to go down in a perfectly even film, too thin and the gold won't adhere, too thick and it wrinkles. She uses a ruling pen with a custom ground blade profile that lays down a ribbon of sizing exactly the right thickness. No brush can match that consistency.
She's not using a vintage tool off eBay. She's using modern precision ground instruments.
Right, and that's an important point. Not all ruling pens are the same. There are dozens of blade geometries, flat blades for general work, curved blades for following contours, pointed blades for hairlines. Materials range from basic steel to brass to titanium. Some modern makers are producing ruling pens with synthetic ruby tips for wear resistance, or with tiny reservoirs made from synthetic bristles that hold more ink behind the blades so you're not reloading every three lines.
Eads is another name that comes up. He does those micro detail illustrations on metal panels.
Eads uses ruling pens for detail work on copper and aluminum. The ink he's using is often an oil-based etching, resist. It has to adhere to polished metal, survive an acid bath, and release cleanly. That's a demanding set of requirements. A technical pen wouldn't survive the resist chemistry, and a brush can't give him the sub-millimeter line control he needs for the intricate patterns. The ruling pen is literally the only tool that works.
We've got a tool that started in Renaissance cartography, dominated sign painting for centuries, got replaced by technical pens for drafting, and then came back for applications where the technical pens couldn't cope. That's a weird trajectory.
It's the cockroach of precision instruments. It survives everything because its design space is so minimal that there's nothing to break. And the applications keep expanding as material science creates new inks that are harder to dispense. Conductive graphene inks, ceramic-loaded thermal pastes, UV-curable adhesives loaded with nanoparticles, All of these are easier to apply with a ruling pen than with any cartridge-based system.
There's a conservation angle too, which the prompt specifically asked about.
The 2023 restoration of the Sistine Chapel's astronomical ceiling maps is a perfect example. These are 16th century star charts painted on the ceiling of the Sala della Cosmografia. Over centuries, some of the linework had faded or been damaged by moisture. The conservators needed to in-paint the missing lines, and they had to match the original line widths exactly. Modern technical pens couldn't do it because the shellac-based ink they needed to use, which matched the original formulation, wouldn't flow through a capillary feed, so they used ruling pens. Same tool, same ink chemistry, same line widths as the original cartographers.
That's almost too perfect as a metaphor. The tool survives because it's compatible with the materials of the past and the materials of the future, but not necessarily the materials of the present.
The 20th century was the era of standardized, mass-produced drafting tools. Technical pens with proprietary cartridges, disposable nibs, inks formulated for specific pen models. The ruling pen sat on the sidelines because it didn't fit that ecosystem. But at both ends of the timeline, the shellac and lampblack era and the nanoparticle and ceramic era, the ruling pen is uniquely capable.
What does this mean for someone listening who isn't restoring a Sistine Chapel ceiling or building a Mars rover? Are there practical takeaways here?
First, if you need a line thinner than 0.1 millimeters with opaque, high-viscosity ink, conductive, ceramic, heat-resistant whatever, a ruling pen is likely your best option. Not a technical pen, not a plotter, not a brush. A ruling pen. You can get a decent one for under $30, and it will outlast you. For anyone doing restoration or conservation work, ruling pens are essential for matching historical line widths. Period-correct shellac inks won't flow through modern pens, and modern inks don't look right under magnification. The ruling pen lets you use the original formulations and match the original line weights. Museums and conservation labs know this. It's standard practice in the field. The broader lesson about precision tools. We tend to assume that more complexity equals more precision. More micro-machined parts, tighter tolerances, smarter materials. But sometimes the opposite is true. Removing the capillary feed, removing the cartridge, removing everything except two adjustable blades and gravity that eliminates failure modes. The ruling pen teaches us that precision isn't about how many features you add. It's about how few ways there are for the tool to fail.
Which is a design philosophy that applies to a lot more than pens.
It's the same reason hand engraving persists in die making and firearm decoration. When the material is expensive and the tolerances are unforgiving, you want a tool where the operator has direct, unmediated control. No feeds, no cartridges, no software translation layer. Just the tool, the material, and the hand.
Where does this go? As 3D printing and CNC plotting become ubiquitous, does the ruling pen disappear entirely, or does it persist the way hand engraving has, for tasks where human judgment of line weight and pressure matters?
I think it persists, and not just as a niche craft tool. There's an interesting development in printed electronics where the ruling pen's design principle is being adapted for robotic deposition. The basic idea, two adjustable blades forming a variable gap reservoir, is showing up in micro-dispensing nozzles for printed circuit boards and flexible electronics. Instead of a fixed diameter needle, these nozzles use two adjustable edges that can vary the deposition width on the fly. It's the ruling pen principle, automated.
The 400-year-old mechanism is being reinvented for 21st century manufacturing.
Because it solves a problem that never went away. How do you dispense a precise amount of a difficult fluid in a controlled line? The ruling pen's answer was, adjust the gap between two blades. That answer is just as valid for a robot dispensing conductive ink as it was for a Renaissance cartographer drawing coastlines.
The human-operated version isn't going anywhere either, because there are still situations where you need a person looking at the surface, feeling the ink flow, making micro-adjustments in real time. A CNC plotter can't tell if the ink is starting to thicken because the room temperature dropped. A human with a ruling pen can feel that and open the gap slightly.
That tacit knowledge, the thing you can't program into a machine, is why hand engraving still exists, why hand-tooled leatherwork still exists, why ruling pens still exist. The tool disappears and the hand takes over.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In the 9th century, Islamic cartographers working in what is now Iraq produced the earliest known map pigments using indigo imported from the Kingdom of Sennar in what is now South Sudan. The indigo was ground with gum arabic from the acacia trees of Kordofan, a binder chemistry so stable that manuscripts using it retain their blue intensity 12 centuries later.
12 centuries of blue.
From South Sudan to Baghdad. That's a supply chain.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running. If you enjoyed this episode, you can find more at myweirdprompts.com, where every episode lives and where you can send us your own weird prompts. We read them all.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.